At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Bear Boat Alaska, up your DIY hunting game with one of their 37-foot adventure yachts. You and five of your friends can hunt, fish, set crab pots, shrimp pots, and take DIY to the next level. Bear Boat Alaska is locally owned by a Ketchikan resident who lives here year-round. Call Larry at 907-617-4542 or go to bearboatalaska.com. That's B-A-R-E. boatalaska.com and tell Larry you heard about it on this podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. Here's my wife, Abby, who's at a post-run polar seltzer, raspberry.
That's right.
Yeah. So yesterday we watched Alone, and I've been pondering that today. And I think there's three ways to approach the show Alone. One, you try to win it. Two, you try to get marketable. So you just go there, you know you're not going to win, but you do something that on the back end, once you're done with the show, there's going to be something. Some sort of opportunity is going to be waiting for you because of the show. Or option three, you just kind of go hang out for a little bit. And then you tap out, you go back to the lodge and hang out, and you're not left with any sort of crippling post-starvation effects like some of these people that look like they're 85 when they get taken out. And then 2 weeks later, they look a little bit more human, but are still pretty hammered by the experience. What do you think of my three approaches to the show?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all strategies. I think you're underestimating the fourth type of person, which seems to be exceedingly common on the show, exceedingly rare in real life, where I don't...
exceedingly rare in real life.
Like, not in a bad way, but they just don't understand normal society. Like, the guy who builds a boat, like, just really seems like he's just loving building the boat, having the time of his life. He had that quote about, like, I am socially most engaged when I am alone in nature. And I was like,
that was interesting. Okay. Yeah. So would you put that, like, is he trying to win or is he just having fun or is that like a marketability thing?
No, I think he is just like, that is just who he is. Like, he just doesn't care. Like, his real life, he's like a caretaker in the Indian Islands for some like nature school or something. And I think he just likes being on his own. And
yeah,
it was the same thing with that girl from the last season who was a little bit delusional about, like, she was definitely starving.
Oh yeah. It was great. It was hard
but
to watch.
She was like making pottery.
Yeah.
And just
crushing,
like,
it, but
didn't have, yeah, there's just something.
It's like part of her brain shut down to allow her to just function, and it was weird to kind of watch that. It's fun because, like, that was honest, and
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That guy that was that build the boat is honest. He definitely seems like the type of guy who just likes to do that, like you said, like,
yeah,
just who he is. And it's cool to see those people. I think some of the other people look like they're putting on a show, because
yeah,
they can put on
absolutely
a show. It's impossible to tell, though. Like, all you're getting is the clipped footage, and then it's impossible to have a real honest look. It's a reality TV does not exist, because if people know they're being filmed, they're going to act a little bit different. It's just a consequence. There's no way. Even us going out
hunting, I know that there's a potential story that I might be writing about it at any point. So it's not a total, there's always some angle. And so while it's way different writing versus recording, we live in a time now where it's just different. You can't be alone without, I don't know if it's an ulterior motive, but you just know you're being filmed, like, because you're setting up the cameras.
Yeah, you know you're on a show.
I wonder what it was like before boredom and character making existed. If you're Jim Bridger and you're just riding your horse all around the West, and Kit Carson, some of those legendary people who are just around, and they're part of the history of so many different states in the West. And then you look at like traditional Native cultures who would have like your vision quest, where like a teen would go off and be alone and isolated and away from the protection of society, and then, you know, obviously survive and come back. But we don't exist in that world anymore. And so we get kind of panicked, and some of these people start to freak out pretty early, and they're just not used to not being alone. And sometimes like some of the insecurities are when you're unraveled, or the cocoon that you create through your daily routine, your business, your life, your everything else that maybe insulates you from things that you have to deal with. And all of a sudden, who am I without that? I think there's a lot of, it makes me wonder what would happen to me if I was out there for a while, what I would start thinking about. Would I have like these really good transcendentalist thoughts? Or would I just kind of lose my mind?
You would lose your mind.
I think I would start off trying to be like poetic, trying to like channel the inner Walt Whitman. But Whitman had people at his cabin. He doesn't even hide the fact. Like, he would have people come out to the cabin. They'd just think about stuff and talk about stuff and visit. So I think without having that, I think it would just be like a long podcast of me just standing in front of the camera. And yeah. I think I'd do horrible.
Yeah. So answer me. So how would you go out? Like, what's the straw? What's the last straw?
I don't know. Maybe it would be the first straw. I think I could convince myself, like, I'm there for a week. I think a week, like, I've been out hunting and I've been out for a while, but it's different when you have all the stuff that you need plus food. If you're starting at square one, if you're one of those people who gets sick within the first week for whatever reason, you're not going to win, because your body can't even function normally. And now you're trying to recover from a cold, sickness, you know, rejecting food, or, you know, you get an allergic reaction or something like that. You're not going to win. There's no longevity there, because your body will not be able to recover and then thrive. You're done. Yeah. So I think I like food. And I think it would be fun to kind of go around and try stuff, but it would be hard to, I think I would go out and try to do the hunt stuff. I'd try to track stuff, and hey, look at this. I'm trying to do this. There was the guy who was trying to fish, but he walked right past a river that was meeting the lake, which would probably be the best place to fish.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was a lot closer to camp. And so I'd try to establish that, a good fishing spot, a good hunting thing. But then I'm not sure how long my tolerance would be for failure. And if I went out too hard and I'm saying, I'm tired, it's over, would I even get my shelter built? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that you have all of the like fishing hunting skills to survive. I think that whether it's a week in, 2 weeks in, you're really hungry, you do something small but stupid, and you just snap. That's
like small.
Or you'd be the guy that like lights the shelter on fire.
You think I'd light my own shelter on fire? Oh, no, on accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Like, I'd get pissed off because I lost a trout and I'd light my own shelter on fire?
No, like, yeah, on accident, you something. I don't know, actually, you're pretty diligent about like those types of things. It would be something small. It wouldn't be something, you wouldn't go down in flames.
No, I could see, I think I'm better now, but there was definitely a time where if I lost a fish, I would then like break my rod.
Yeah.
And then there would be
You would like throw your little spool of line that they allow you into the lake. And then you'd be like,
I don't know if I would chuck it into the lake. I would definitely throw it against the rocks and it would break.
And then
the spool
bounce into the lake.
The spool would be unusable. Yeah. I think I'm way better than I was. But yeah, I've.
Yeah.
I think you would be out there for a long time. Because I think you would forage.
Yeah, I think.
I think you would. In a worst case scenario, I don't think you would ever build your shelter because you would be just planning it. And you would sketch it out on a piece of bark with some charcoal. And you would sketch out all that stuff and it would never get built. But I'd be in the same way too. Like food and shelter, I'd be so afraid of being hungry.
Yeah.
Because I love to eat.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun to kind of try that. But I don't want the long-lasting effects of that. I don't want to look back at the... It's not worth the sacrifice. I don't think. And I don't think that's a... I was listening to, I think it was Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking about how in the NFL with the concussions, like people didn't necessarily know the long-term effect of having a lot of concussions. You get your bell rung, and then it's even a long time after you retire, you could have some serious problems, which was not necessarily the known risk. Whereas if you're doing MMA, and he was talking about this, if you're going boxing, everybody knows you could end up like Muhammad Ali or Joe Frazier. If you do one fight too many or two fights too many or whatever, that is an absolute consequence. I think people find it still worth it because there's a monetary thing. There's also the glory type thing. I don't see this as the same thing. Everybody or not everybody gets $500,000. Like you could just go on the show, you get your 10 minutes of fame and that's it. And then do you have some sort of lingering issue because you were malnourished and you know you cut 5 to 10 years of either viability or actual years off your life? I don't think that was worth it. I think it'd be a fun experience, but yeah, I don't.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's really cool to see what people do out there. I mean, you know, the boat building and the pier building.
Oh, that was cool. Yeah.
And it would be nice if this show didn't incentivize like starvation. And I know that the mental part is a big part of how you win that kind of show, but it kind of makes it a little bit less enjoyable to watch when you're like, oh, this person is destroying themselves.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, like conflict drives plot. You got to have it. I don't feel, I mean, again, the people who know, they know what they're signing up for. Like, you know that. But you also know at any time, if you feel like you're going too far, you could definitely shut it down. And some people have. There was one guy who was very heartfelt in his, like, I'm nothing without my family. He decided to go back. Yeah, I don't think he has many ill effects at all. Because he lost some weight. But, you know, so you don't have to go to that point. But yeah, I think the incentivizing of the creation of conflict, and I wonder how much of that stuff is, they're pressured into making stuff that's going to make for good TV. And so people are taking risks they wouldn't ordinarily take. So I wonder if there's that level of... There's sometimes they're doing stuff that just doesn't make sense. But that's, to me, like maybe it makes total sense to them. I don't know.
But yeah, it makes you definitely want to go camp out for like a week and just see how hard it is.
Yeah. We just do it for fun.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we've gone on some hikes when we did that one in the Wind River Range. All right. It's called the
Wind River Range, yeah.
Wind River. But what's the nickname for it? I always screw this up.
The Winds.
But what's the, what are the...
You always call it the Windies.
The Windies. Because it's the Snowies.
Yeah.
The Snowies are near Laramie. The Winds are the Wind River Range over yonder. Okay, yeah. It was what, 18 miles back there, 14 miles back there, 20 miles back there?
Yeah, 14.
I think it was longer than that.
Were you talking round trip or one way?
One way.
think it was 14 one way.
Oh, I'm mixing up a different one that we did to the secret spot. But the one, the first one we did.
It doesn't
matter. Yeah. But going back there and being back there and hiking around to some of these other lakes to fish and then deciding to go out early. Like, we had the food to stay later, but being able to, it was just kind of fun to, yeah, all right, well, let's hike out today and then go all the way out rather than spend the extra day. Because we were flying out east, right? Weren't we?
Yeah.
We wanted to get back on the road, so rather than stay at that mosquito-infested lake that had no trout, four of us were stinking fishing nothing.
Yeah.
Not even like a little, it didn't make any sense.
Well, we caught like some little, like 4 inches or something stupid.
I think it was less than that. I think it was like half inches.
Like they weren't even big enough to get the whole fly in their mouth.
No, I think the caddis were eating the fish. It was monsters. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a kind of a sad speaking to our current state. I think how therapeutic that would be for so many people. And having these people have great skills for the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
But you can be very skilled and very certified and very everything, but that doesn't mean that you can survive. Doesn't mean that you can last or that you're not immune to mistakes. You see it with hunters too. Accomplished hunters or hunters who have been, I've hunted rugged territory somewhere else. Well, it's not here. You know, things are different.
Yeah.
And I think that's a danger. And I think sometimes we get really excited about how badass we are as hunters that we forget that there's something else that we're going to have to be wary of when we're out of our home hunt.
Well, and I think it's hugely different being out with one or more other people versus when you're on your own. When you're on your own, you have no margin for error.
Yeah.
When you're with another person, I just think they can, if you get sick, they can, you know, pick up the slack. If something happens, they maybe have that extra piece of equipment that you didn't, you know, like,
yeah.
It just, and I mean, that's not even to mention like kind of the mental side of it. But I think being alone is, I think a lot of people probably underestimate how difficult that is.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people say that they don't like people. They don't like being around people, but we can even substitute online for at least social interaction. So you can email, you can like, you can scroll through, you can get messages, you can have an idea of what's going on, but having nothing, I think, would be tough. How long do you think you and I would make it if it was like a 2-on-2, like a 10 teams of two?
I like to think we'd make it a while. Here's the thing. I think it depends on what time of the year you start, because they always start them in the fall, because I think they set them up to fail, right?
Yeah.
So I think if we got to start like in the summer and you could actually store stuff up, I think we could last quite a while.
Yeah. Well, they start them. It seems like it could even be late summer based on the climate. So you have winter starting so much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It might be August or September. So in some climates, it hangs on for a while. But that makes a huge difference. It's that late summer, early fall can be just a bonanza of stuff. That's what it is here. You got fish, you got deer, you got berries. I mean, you got so much stuff. But so if it started in August, and it was like here. Home court advantage.
I mean, I think we could probably last like a year. I don't think, knowing that I could go to a house, like I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But
why? Yeah.
If we got stuck and we had no communication and for whatever reason we had to be out there, like
I think that's another thing too. If it's a survival situation versus a show.
Yeah.
Because survival situation, way different. If it's a show and you can tap out, makes a big difference. So if things start getting sideways, then, you know, you can do that. And it's like a game. It's a quest of how long you can stay here. If it's a survival situation, I think that changes a lot because you're not there on your own terms.
Yeah.
So I think if it was a show and it was here, I think we would do well because we appreciate dryness. And we know how absolutely at the core of every decision we make, it's going to be about being able to get dry, because hypothermia can happen even in August.
Yeah.
So that would be our benefit here. But if you go further north, like, it would be, that's just a different brand of cold. You know, what are we?
But also, I mean, like, they give you, I mean, you're allowed to bring, like, what? I think at least 10 things or 15. Yeah. Like, you can bring a bunch of tools and tarps and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
I think some people that would come up here, they're trained for, and that's what some of the waterproof gear and some of the other hunting type stuff, that's, it's made for waiting out an afternoon thunderstorm, or like a day of rain. Whereas here, you might be here and it's 45 and rainy for 10 straight days. And if you can't get dry, that's going to really wear on you. And that's going to be pretty tough. So you have to be able to be prepared for that. So I think that would be one of the first things we prioritize, making sure, monitoring our wetness, knowing that it's not going to, you know, this rain is going to end. We're not going to hope for it to rain. We know it's going to be everlasting.
Yeah.
What about Wyoming? How do you think we do in Wyoming?
I mean, it depends where in Wyoming, like mountains or prairie or.
Ew, prairie. Oh, it'd be brutal. No way. Zero chance. Yeah. Like 20 minutes, like a day. Give it a day. Try to sneak up on some antelope. But yeah, that'd be awful. I think it would also be different if you're in the snowies versus the bighorns. Versus the, well, Tetons are, that's more in Idaho, right? It's kind of split.
Yeah, they're in Wyoming.
Like the main three peaks are like right on the border, right? Or are they on the Wyoming side?
They're on the Wyoming side, yeah.
We'll go Wind River Range. You got grizzly bears there, which would change things.
Yeah.
And there's grizzly bears in the bighorns too, right?
No. Hmm. Oh. Not officially.
Not officially. Allegedly, not that there we might know be one. Of. Yeah, yeah, that would be a big thing. Cause you got a predator that's out looking for stuff. Black bears, I respect them, but I'm not worried about them. But yeah, that changes things a lot. And they've really hyped that up on the show. What is this? Is this season over? Are we like months late on this thing, or is it kind of new?
I don't know. No, actually, I think because they run on the History Channel and then it goes on Netflix like way later. So, okay. Yeah, it's way over.
Oh, yeah. So it ran May 28th, ran during the summer, May 28th to August 4th. So, yeah. Right? Is that it? Oh, this says Labrador on this.
Yeah, this one I think is.
What season are we even watching?
I think it must have been filmed in 2020 or 2021, because they're all wearing masks.
I did see that. Yeah. I wonder too if they're hyper sensitive about people coming back in. If you happen to have a little bit of a germ and you have this person whose immune system is totally wrecked and they get sick from you.
Yeah.
Liability, I don't know. But yeah, that seems like it's a 20 or 21. Who knows? We're watching a season.
Yeah, I think it's season 8.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, interesting stuff. Speaking of food and growing food, or actually not growing food, but foraging, we want to be able to set up our yard with as much food as we can. Yeah. So it is going to be a bear central. Everyone in the neighborhood is going to hate us because of our apple trees and bushes.
I know.
But there's already bears getting into garbage, so, and a wolf that's been running around. But talk about your vision for what you want and some of the complementary elements of what you want to plant so that we can have like some good food coming out of our.
Well, so last year I planted 3 apple trees, which are all still alive. Kind of interesting I was looking at them a couple of days ago, and they're all budding, and it's January, so that's not good. So we're hoping they make it through the winter.
That's not good at all.
It's been a bit warm.
Yes, last week and a half has been pretty nice, but bad.
Yeah, and also all my garlic is, like, it's all growing. I've never grown garlic before, so I'm hoping that it's fine, but it all might die. I don't know. Yeah, so I'm planning to put in probably about 4 raised beds, just because it's so wet here, and the raised beds will kind of allow the soil to drain better and warm up a little faster. So I have some raised beds. I want to add a couple cherry trees, and then just every type of berry possible.
Yeah, we thinned out some salmon berries, so in a patch that had like 2 huckleberry bushes. So hopefully that'll kind of proliferate a little bit, and we have some blueberries that are on the peripheral. But those are so nice to have. Pick them and then have them to freeze and add them to your shakes or whatever. So nice to have your pancakes or whatever. That's mm-hmm. What else are we gonna go for? We had some potatoes, which is awesome. So yeah. It's good to have potatoes.
Yeah, we'll plant a bunch of potatoes. I don't know. I mean, mostly I guess for the raised beds, I'm looking at like root vegetables, so carrots, turnips, beets, radishes, and greens, broccoli, cabbage, lettuce, chard, that type of stuff, just because it's all kind of cool season vegetables, so hopefully they'll be pretty low maintenance to grow. Then I'll probably try out a couple different squash varieties, zucchini, see if anything does well here. And then, yeah, a bunch of peas, too. That's another big one that does well here.
Yeah, we did pretty well. Those are good. We didn't have a whole lot, but we kind of got a late start on some of that planting because obviously the house construction is going on, and we were using that front part. Do you think that we are just going to have so much food that there will be not enough slugs to eat all of our food, or how do you?
I'm gonna.
How are we gonna?
We're gonna kill them with slug bait.
We're gonna kill them with slug bait. Good.
Yeah.
The little ones are horrible. Because they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're on all of it.
Yeah, we'll see. I've been told by some people here that they use slug bait and they can grow. They haven't had a problem with slugs, so.
Nice.
I'm hoping it works for us. But yeah, definitely slugs. I mean, I planted stuff in like late July last year when we got back from Prince of Wales, and slugs pretty much demolished it on site.
Yeah. I think being able to look after things will be huge too. You were gone up until, like you said, the end of the month. So it was just kind of me, but then I was over there too, and you weren't really able to kind of tend to things. So that'll be, our chores will be nice.
Yeah, and the deer definitely got in the fence and ate everything too.
Yeah. It was weird with the strawberries because they always left a couple leaves. It was as though they were conscious of eliminating a potential food source. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind the deer as much. They're kind of annoying, but the slugs are infuriating.
Yeah.
Deer's pretty cool. Slugs, no purpose.
Yeah, we're going to be trying to kill them, so we'll see how it goes.
What about the complementary element of some of the things? Like I don't know much about nitrogen fixers and whatnot, but how do you make effective decisions?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is kind of just trial and error. I'm also going to plant a bunch of flowers, probably, that, I mean, flowers can do a lot of things. Some flowers supposedly can deter deer, although I've also seen deer just eat a lot of flowers, so I don't know how real that is. And then also, like, the flowers will attract pollinators, and they provide, you know, just a lot of benefits for good insects, pollinators, and also, like, predatory insects. So, probably plant some flowers around the trees and then in some of the kind of open areas that were opened up by digging and construction stuff. And then nitrogen fixers, any kind of legume, so beans, peas, lupin flowers are actually also nitrogen fixers.
What is a nitrogen fixer?
They can take atmospheric nitrogen and N2 gas out of atmosphere and they turn it into a form of nitrogen that plants can take up.
So it makes the soil better.
Yeah. Yes.
Put it in husband's words.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, gonna experiment with some of that stuff. I mean, I don't know. It all looks great when you're planning and putting it on paper, but like last year I planted a bunch of stuff in April when I left to go to Prince of Wales and it looked fine. And then we got back, there was like a couple Nasturtium plants left and that was about it.
Yeah, that was the rough thing. Once everything else started growing up around it and then... Yeah, it's hard to identify as stuff is first shooting up. Is this good or is it bad? And then, like, you're gone for a couple of days or a week, and then all of a sudden, or in my case, like, 4 weeks, and all you get, and it's just, they're gone.
Yeah, I think when the deer got in, they probably ate everything.
Yeah. But, yeah, should be fun. Be good. We won't have to starve.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping... You can grow some stuff this year. I'm excited because I used to have such good gardens in Wyoming and haven't gotten to do that here yet.
Yeah. Got a good amount of space, which would be nice. And then be good. So, all right. Well, that'll conclude this episode. And make sure you check out themediocrelesson.com or go to onstep.media.
Ooh.
Yeah. Kind of expanding it. So the Mediocre Alaskan is the podcast, but as we get into some of the other things, be kind of expanding just a little bit there.
On Step Media.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.